scares a single journalist away from coming to Gaza to cover this story, because the Palestinian people are very beautiful, kind-hearted, loving people who the world needs to know more about. And so do not be discouraged. Come and tell the story. It's a wonderful story. And I'm just happy to be here, and thanks again for all your support.
That's journalist Steve Sentani, after being released just over the weekend, after being held kidnapped and being held hostage for quite some time by radical Muslims in the conflict in the Middle East. He's a Fox News journalist. He and his cameraman were both held hostage and were apparently, according to the story, required at gunpoint to convert to Islam. A little bit later in today's program, we're going to play their statements that were made over in the Islamic media of their conversions, and I guess you could say kind of their conversion statements, their testimonies to their conversion in Islam, and get your reaction to it. Uwe Simonetto joins us here for the first half hour of the program today. He's an international journalist. We're going to talk about the kidnapping and alleged conversion of and release of these two Fox News journalists, and also a little later with Uwe, a confession by a prominent liberal German author that he was a member of the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo. We'll be talking about that with Uwe here. During this half hour of Issues Etc., I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Monday. It is the 28th of August. In the second half hour of the program, audio open lines, we'll talk about the alleged conversion of these two Fox News journalists and play their conversion statements, get your reaction to it. Also, another journalist who was held in captivity, I believe in Iraq, she said she was also pressured to convert, but didn't. And she was released as well. In the second hour of the program, we're going to spend some time with Pastor David Loftus talking about close or closed communion. It's been the historic practice of the church to draw the boundary of fellowship around the Lord's Supper very carefully, very boldly, and rather close to the table. Now, if you were looking out on Western Christianity, you would think that there was no such thing as close or closed communion fellowship. But there has historically been in the church. Why and what is it? Who partakes of the Lord's Supper worthily? We'll answer those questions there in the second hour of the program at 4:30. We're going to review a sermon by Pastor John Vicar on Luke 19:41-48. Jesus weeps over Jerusalem and Jesus cleanses the temple. An excellent sermon he preached at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois, a couple Sundays ago. We'll get that sermon review under our belts. And then at 5:15, we'll start a conversation with Pastor Marcus Zill. He's campus pastor of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and Campus Center in Laramie, Wyoming, and Christ on Campus executive for Higher Things, that youth organization. We're going to talk about confessing Christ on campus and staying Christian on campus in the last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We have an in-studio email address here. You can email us all during these 3 hours right here in the studio with your questions or your comments, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Uwe Simonetto is a regular guest. He's an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe, welcome back.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
Well, in your long and storied career as a journalist, you covered areas of conflict directly. You also covered wars.
Right.
Did you ever fear kidnapping or being taken hostage, Uwe?
Kidnapping, yes, or being taken POW or prisoner, yes, indeed, in Vietnam. That was a danger that all of us incurred. Although horrible as it was in Vietnam, that sort of story that one would have been forced at gunpoint to convert to another religion or no religion at all, forswear one's own religion, that wouldn't have been the case. I had another very unpleasant experience in the Middle East in 1967, where I was taken at gunpoint by an Arab sheikh and almost raped, was kissed, and fortunately my driver intervened. But that was very unpleasant. But again, it was simply unpleasant, but it wasn't a forced conversion.
So what's your reaction to the story as it's being reported now? Hopefully we have the accurate facts on these two Fox News reporters, Steve Sentani and his cameraman, last name of Wig, who we've got the audio here. We're going to play for our audience in just a few minutes, statements of their renunciation of their Christian faith, I assume, and their acceptance of Islam.
Well, I've heard it just now over the internet. Well, there are three for a statement. First of all, of course, we don't know the circumstances, and we have to find that one out in the first place. The second reaction is that this proves once more, in my mind at least, that we're way that Newt Gingrich is right. We are in the early stages of World War III, and it is a very, very, very serious war of cultures. Where people will be forced to convert. And in this particular case, the third instance is, of course, how easily it is for evidently badly catechized people to give up their faith. But that is a judgment that I would actually rather prefer to withhold simply because I don't know the circumstances yet, other than what you and I have heard on television. But the most serious aspect for the rest of it is that we are at war, and it is a world war, and we're kidding ourselves by believing that we could extricate ourselves. We cannot.
I was struck by what appeared to be, to me, Uwe, an inconsistency in listening to those professions of Islam from the two Fox News journalists. They said in their statements, and those statements, of course, may not have been their words at all. They may have been forced to say them for the cameras. We don't know. But they said again and again that Islam is a peaceful religion. They both urged George W. Bush and Tony Blair to embrace Islam and bring peace to the Middle East and to the world. And yet, if the story is true, these men made those statements at the point of a gun.
Well, right. I mean, as I said, we have to reserve judgment. We have to hear about a week or so from now when they've been properly debriefed whether this is actually their belief. But what troubles me in this is, of course, that what they said is the sort of baloney you keep hearing from many Westerners, liberals in particular, but these were not even liberals, who say, well, basically Islam is such a nice thing and they're such a wonderful, cuddly lot. You know, in the meantime, we know all the stuff that's being committed in the crimes that are being committed in the name of Islam, and there is enough material on the tenets of Islam which don't make it sound a particularly peaceful religion. And that is what troubles me. Because it gets accepted and it gets bantered about and people hear half the thing. And we just say, well, it's just another Abrahamic religion like ours, like Christianity and Judaism. And they're actually basically nice guys. We just have to accommodate them somehow. And that is very troubling.
Another thing that troubles me is that, maybe the parallel isn't apt, but if someone in the U.S. were kidnapped, say a Jew were kidnapped, yeah, by a radical Christian group or a radical group calling themselves Christians, yeah, and were forced to profess faith in Jesus Christ at the gunpoint, I imagine that Christians all over the United States would renounce that kind of an action and say,
correct,
this is not how we would have people embrace faith in Jesus Christ. Have you heard any reactions like that after the story of the forced conversions of these two journalists?
Well, certainly not. And I've been searching when just before Jeff Schwartz called me, I've been searching the internet to see any reactions. No, you don't see any reactions, you see. And this is the whole thing. And that is, when I was religious affairs editor of United Press International, whenever something outrageous is being done in the name of Islam, you keep wondering where the so-called moderate and peaceful and Western Muslims are. Oh, they make sort of tacit statements. Well, that's not really in the Quran, and that's not the true meaning of the Quran, and any of these things. But I don't know whether I've told you this story once, but when I at one point interrogated or interviewed a very well-known Muslim lawyer, a woman, teaching in the United States about the death sentences against so-called adulteresses in Nigeria, what these women were supposed to be stoned to death. And the woman said, no, we have to do something. I'm prepared to lead a delegation of Muslim scholars to Nigeria to really tell them what Islam is really like, and we have to take a totally different view of it. And I said, well, am I allowed to write this? I taped it at the time. And she said, no, sure, that's my opinion. Next morning she called me weeping, and she, of course, had received death threats. She said, well, you know, can you correct this? I said, I can't correct it because it's out in the world and you said it. And then she retracted that statement. We are in this situation where we are dealing with an enemy here that does not take prisoners. And if anybody is prepared to be slightly moderate in his Islamic faith, they risk their lives.
How aware is Western Europe of not only that, but the multiple aspects of the threat of Islam?
Well, increasingly so, Todd. Sometimes I have the feeling I'm in France. We are aware of things going on. I mean, what your media don't report, for example, is that is what is our daily experience here. You notice that you remember that these 11 or 12 flights were supposed to be blown up between London and the United States. Well, at the same time, in Germany, three passenger trains were supposed to be bombed. And in the last minute, they were stopped and they just arrested 5 people. So you have, in a sense, from Madrid via London to Germany to Bombay in India and all other places, we suddenly have an accumulation of incidents following 9/11 in the United States 5 years ago that make people woefully aware of the danger we're in. And only some fools, like, excuse me, one of your former presidents, then can sort of point to Israel and the United States as culprits. I mean, he's the guy who gave away Iran, if you don't mind. But I don't think that this is nowadays generally the notion here. I think people are becoming aware of it, are very aware of it, and are very concerned.
We're talking with Uwe Simonetto about the kidnapping and alleged conversion and the release of 2 Fox News journalists over the weekend. In just a moment, we'll take up the subject of a confession lately by a prominent liberal German author that he was a member of the Waffen SS. In about 15 minutes, open lines for your reaction to this alleged conversion to Islam by 2 Fox News journalists. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live this Monday, August the 28th. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Finally, on the subject of the journalist, Uwe, talk about the need for journalists to be there in areas of conflict, areas of war, to tell the story, to tell the truth, and even to be in harm's way in order to tell that story.
Well, unless journalists are present at these things, of course, the world will not be informed. This is where the media have a very, very strong, powerful responsibility, and which is, of course, also what troubles me about these statements, that now suddenly they are relativizing the horrors that we're experiencing in the Middle East. But you cannot chicken away as a journalist, as a reporter, from conflict, and you have to place yourself in harm's way. Unless, of course, you want to report about the local high school soccer game. That's another deal. But if you want to be in, if you want to cover world affairs, you have to place your life at risk, just like everybody else, like soldiers and what have you. And at the same time, you have to keep a cool head, which is, as those of us who've been in it, is often very, very, very difficult, because you become emotional And if you're there, for example, if you see people die under terrible circumstances, sometimes holding their hands as they do, it is a hard job, and I'm actually glad that I did my wars in Vietnam, where it was somewhat more civilized than what is going on in the Middle East right now. But I certainly don't envy these guys, and I admire them, those who do their jobs responsibly and courageously, and there are many of those.
Tell us the story of Günter Grass.
Yeah. Well, here is Günter Grass, best known in America as the author of The Tin Drum and also a Nobel laureate in literature. Now, Günter Grass came from Danzig, now Gdansk in Poland at the time. It was German, of course. And ever since the war, since World War II, the end of World War II, he kept wagging his fingers into every German's face, whether we were Nazis or not Nazis, or hailed from Nazi backgrounds, or didn't hail from Nazi backgrounds, being what the Germans call a Moralpolitiker, preaching morals, and complaining about the Catholic stale stink of Catholicism in the Adenauer years. May I remind you that Adenauer was an ardent anti-Nazi, was imprisoned by the Nazis, and Germans consider him the most important German in history, even before Martin Luther. Martin Luther ranks second right now. So here's Günter Grass, and he's always been lecturing and always been going on at the United States for Vietnam, every alleged misdeed the Americans might have committed. And then when Ronald Reagan and Chancellor Kohl, I think it was 1988, met at the German military cemetery in Bitburg, holding hands, an act of reconciliation, and everybody went on because these graves there contained 2,000 graves, and 40 of those were members of the Waffen-SS, the armed wing, the military wing of the SS. And Günter Grass chided Kohl and chided Reagan and belittled them and said, how retrograde we Germans all were. And, you know, some of us got very, very cheesed off about this because some of us did not hail from Nazi backgrounds, and those of us who were children definitely weren't Nazis, and we didn't always need Günter Grass to remind us of. And now, as he is publishing a new his latest book, with previously sagging circulation for his books, he suddenly reveals that he volunteered for the Waffen-SS, and that he served in a division called Frunzburg, and that was a division of which soldiers or casualties are buried at Bitburg, where he complained. His comrades were buried in Bitburg. And so this is, of course, the Germans are now outraged. First of all, they think that, you know, he is a hypocrite. Had he just said early on, yeah, I was a fool, I was in the Waffen-SS, I never committed any crimes, nobody accuses Grass of having committed crimes, he was just a member of a Nazi, not of a regular army unit, but of a Nazi unit, and very often people were just drafted into the SS, but he had actually volunteered, not for the SS, he had actually volunteered for the Navy, and then was sent to the Waffen-SS. And that has people infuriated, actually everybody in Germany, because he always played himself up as such a hero and as such a saint, you know. And now suddenly, 60 years on, he admits that he had actually forgotten to tell us that he had been one of them himself.
It is often portrayed, Nazism, in historical retrospect,
yeah,
as a kind of a right-wing, in fact, it's often just talked about as a right-wing movement.
Yeah, which it wasn't.
Was National Socialism a right-wing movement?
Well, certainly not. National Socialism was a Leninist movement. I mean, Hitler was a great admirer of Lenin. And it called itself National Socialism. It was its doctrine, in it, its basic doctrine, other than, of course, the anti-Semitic and racist doctrine, its basic doctrine was left-wing, was socialism. It was driven by envy. And Günter Grass himself has shown this in his own life, that he came from a background envious of those up there, those who had made it, those who had previously run German society. Previously, by that I mean, of course, in imperial days or royal days. And National Socialism, those of us who've experienced it, I experienced it as a child, and who then experienced communism after that, could find very little difference between the two. They had the same structure, they had the same underlying class struggle that later drove the communists, and before the Nazis drove the communists in the Soviet Union and elsewhere. And then, of course, here's the big lie. They somehow, the Günter Grasses and all these people, and there are lots in Germany, many of them coming out of Nazi backgrounds or from Nazi families, who suddenly try to make up for it by being very left-wing, by turning the public opinion around and showing Nazism as a right-wing movement. So by implication, those of us who are conservatives, who are Christians, are linked to Nazism because we are right-wing, and as opposed to those good left-wingers like the communists and others. And in World War II, the opposition against the Nazis and the resistance against the Nazis was driven by conservative Christians, primarily, and social democrats, primarily by conservative Christians.
Uwe, can you give us a couple minutes on the other side of this break?
Sure.
All right. Here's a quick call from Herman, who's calling from Illinois. Herman, our time is short before this break.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad you had Uwe on today for these topics. On Nazism, it has a number of primal worldviews that are shared with liberalism as well as communism, and that is an overlooked fact when people try to historically review these things and make casual statements today trying to call somebody a Nazi or a fascist. Even Hitler admired Mussolini, and there were worldview commonalities such as the secularization of man and society that held these things together.
Thank you very much, Herman. When we come back from this break, we're going to get a response from our guest, Uwe Simonetto, to Herman's observation there. Primal worldview shared by both Nazism and liberalism today. Did Hitler claim to be a Christian? What is the lesson to be learned from the history of this German liberal author, Günter Grass, who late in his career now admits that he was a member of the Waffen-SS as a young man? We'll be answering those questions on the other side of this break with Uwe Simonetto, an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. By the way, Uwe's also written an article for the Next Issues, Etc. journal titled Luther and the Jews. When we come back from this break, I'll tell you how you can get a free copy of the Issues, Etc. journal.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Martin Luther is hailed as one of the most influential church reformers of the 16th century. But what kind of ideas drove Martin Luther? How was Luther's theology related to his ideas on politics or philosophy? Luther's World of Thought is our Issues Etc. book of the month for August. This hardback book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information about Luther's World of Thought, call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find Luther's World of Thought right there on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Learn more about Martin Luther's world and Martin Luther's thought with Luther's World of Thought, issuesetc.org, or 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for August.
Capitalizing on what's known as the Mozart effect, companies are creating musical products for unborn babies.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Marketing learning and stimulation products to expectant parents is nothing new, but it is hard to reconcile legal abortion with this notion. The unborn baby that gets Mozart in the womb is the same being that gets aborted. The difference? One is a so-called wanted child. The other, to use the parlance of abortion, is a choice. Justifying abortion requires all sorts of inconsistencies and denials. It's time to put abortion behind us and protect all unborn children.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org. That's sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Christian here, writing today's Minute. Maybe you remember me from last week. I'm starting to help my Grandpa Dale with his minutes. I was born 4 months ago, and Gramps asked the seminary's admissions department to send me an enrollment packet. Cute Gramps, cute. But now I'm on their mailing list, and I have questions. You say you've got this great theological library, 248,000 books. Since I will learn to count on my fingers and toes, I wonder how many seminary workers it took to count those books. I will be a reader. Already my dad and mom have given me books. My favorites are the Belly Button Book, Guess How Much I Love You, and My Little Book About God. Do you have books like that in your big building of books? Do you teach your students to study big people books so they can show how much God loves all his children? I hope so. I'm curious about everything, including God. I don't want to grow up and stop being curious about him. Seems to me big people stop being curious about God. Otherwise, it would be standing room only in your big book building. Another book I have is Hey, Wake Up! That's right, big people. Hey, wake up! It's all about God and people. I'm Christian.
Is this how you feel as a parent? Like a frightened chicken, afraid the sky might fall on your family any moment? Focus on the Family with Dr. James Dobson can help keep you from chickening out on your most vital role, being the parent your kids need most. Keep parenting in perspective with Focus on the Family. Heard weekdays right here.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilken. We're coming to you this Monday afternoon of the 28th of August, talking with Uwe Simonetto for the next few minutes. He's bringing us the story of Günter Grass, a prominent liberal German author who has not only been chiding the German people for the better part of several decades, but has recently admitted that he was a member of the Waffen-SS during the days of Hitler in Germany. Before the break, Uwe, we had Herman on the line. He observed, as it sounded like you were observing, that there are primal worldviews shared between Nazism, liberalism, and communism. What are your thoughts?
Well, yes, there are primal worldviews. One, of course, was precisely the anti-Christian deal. Now, you will read, there's a brand new book out by Richard Steigman Gall, called The Holy Reich, which claims that the Nazis were basically Christians, which of course is nonsense, because those who claimed to be Christians were Marcionites. They wanted to do away with the Old Testament and with Judaism. But there's another book out by a wonderful German-Canadian woman called Kara Perger, who shows that actually the Nazis were primarily neo-pagans, and that their worldview is very, very similar to that of present-day neo-paganism, you know, the New Age folk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, feminist theology, the reimagining movement within the mainline churches. But here's the deal. I mean, both Karl Popper and Steigman Gall quoted Hitler as saying, "Nothing will prevent me from eradicating totally, root and branch, all Christianity in Germany." That was his deal. The leader of the German, civilian leader of the German resistance again in World War II against the Nazis, Karl Goerdeler, went around the world before the war warning Americans and the British in particular against Hitler's intent to not only eradicate all the Jews, but also all of Christianity and ultimately capitalism. It is, and you know, this is a known fact. Those of us who lived as children in those days knew, for example, of the very harsh left-wing policies that Hitler, that the Nazis imposed on us, including, of course, the collectivization of the mind and the collectivization of the people. With the additional anti-Semitic thing, which, of course, the communists didn't have.
Finally, then, what's the lesson to be learned from the story of this German liberal author, Günter Grass, who reveals now that he was a member of the Waffen-SS?
Well, the story is hypocrisy, and the story is to the lesson that we have to learn is that when somebody comes out and sets himself up as the great preacher of morals to the rest of society, thinking always of, unfortunately, of Jimmy Carter in that same context, we better also check a little bit his background. In the case of Carter, it was that he's handed over Iran, which is now going to be a nuclear power, which is menacing the rest of the world, handed it over to these crazies. And in the case of Günter Grass, he blustered a great deal in order to hide his own imperfections in his childhood, in his youth, instead of just saying, yes, I was a fool, I made a mistake, young people do make mistakes, and I'm terribly sorry, would have been perfectly sufficient. That would have been, by the way, the proper Christian way of acting. But, of course, Grass wasn't a Christian, and he also always agitated against Christians ever since World War II.
Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist. He's director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. As I mentioned before, he's written an article for the Next Issues, Etc. journal titled Luther and the Jews. We'll send it to you free. Just call 1-800-737-0172. It's our resource line number, and ask for a free complimentary copy of the Next Issues, Etc. journal. Uwe's article is in there. 1-800-737-0172. Uwe, it's always a pleasure, and
thank you.
Get a good night's sleep.
We'll be back.
Yes, thank you. Well, we started out with Uwe talking about the kidnapping, alleged conversion, and release of these two Fox News journalists, Steve Sentani and Olaf Wig, one the journalist, the other the cameraman. Uwe mentioned being shocked to see the video that had been on, I think it was Arab television. The statements made by these two men. We've got those statements. We're going to play them for you here for the remainder of this hour, and I want your reaction to this alleged conversion. Now, these are the statements of the two men. We have no way of knowing whether these are truthful statements, whether these are statements written for them by their kidnappers and those who are holding them prisoner. We don't know any of that, but these are simply the statements. I want your reaction to these alleged conversions to Islam. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address for your questions and your comments, issuesetc@kfuo.org. These statements begin with a little bit of Arabic because they are making their statement of faith in Allah, and then they make their own statements in English. The first one up is the journalist from Fox News, Steve Sentani.
أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمد رسول الله.
My name is Steve. I'm an American. After I entered Islam, I changed my name to Khalid. I have embraced Islam and say the word Allah. And my leader is the Prophet Muhammad. Peace be upon him. Islam is not meant for just some people, but it is the true religion for all people in all times. Westerners are following the wrong path. And I hope they realize that and change their ways. And I hope I can help them to do that, inshallah. Islam helps people to love mercy, brotherhood, equality, and justice. There is no justification for invading Afghanistan and bringing death, injury, and suffering to innocent men, women, and children. There is no justice when the USA invades Iraq and again leaving death, injury, and suffering in its wake, the suffering of innocent men, women, and children. Allah knows and sees all these injustices, and according to the Quran, disbelievers will be cast into an eternal fire. But Allah is also ever merciful, and the West can change. It can change its ways and turn to the purifying power of Islam. Muslims are good people and have Allah in their hearts. And it's an offense against Islam and against Allah when Muslim people are imprisoned in Abu Ghraib and tortured there. Islam forbids torture, even of non-Muslims. Muslim people believe in peace and they love brotherhood. I have a message for President Bush as well. Islam is not fascism. Words like that only serve to deepen a great chasm between peoples, to fan the flames of anger and distrust that already burn in the Muslim world. The West is seen as waging war on Islam, and these words, Islamic fascists, only reconfirm that belief among many. Please, President Bush, please, Tony Blair, open your minds to Islam and bring peace to all people around the world.
All right, there's the plea. This comes in the form of a profession of Islam, a conversion statement, these men have said. Both Fox journalists have said that they were forced to make these statements. And as Uwe said before in his reaction, we don't know. Let's give them some time to be debriefed, and we'll find out all the details of these alleged conversions. But I want your reaction to the alleged conversions of these two Fox journalists. I don't know, was the conversion a condition of their release, or did it simply coincide with their release? I haven't heard that part of the story, and I don't know if that part of the story has actually come out. Other journalists have been released without converting. If time permits, we'll get to a statement from one of those. Here's the second statement. This is the cameraman for Fox News, who had traveled with Steve Sentani, Olaf Wigg, his statement of conversion to Islam.
Muhammad Rasulullah.
My name is Olaf. I'm from New Zealand. After I entered Islam, my name became Jacob, but surely the bombing of foreign nations, the killing of innocent women and children, is only going to fuel the fires of hate. Tell me why our leaders think that dropping bombs on Muslim houses will convince them that the Western way of life is better than theirs. The people of Gaza have suffered for many years in what is effectively a prison camp. They have not been free to come and go. Some say this was all started because of 9/11, but of course that wasn't true. People ask why they hate us so, but then they don't wait for the answer. It is Apache helicopters firing Hellfire missiles made in America that kill the residents of Gaza. America and George Bush are seen as being evil in some people's eyes in this part of the world. And statements from George Bush, like we're at war with Islamic fascists, doesn't help. It's time that the leaders of the West listen to the people. Take notice of the millions protesting in the streets. Stop hiding behind the "I don't negotiate with terrorists" myth. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
All right, there are the two statements. I want your reaction. I don't know if you heard them before. I was a little surprised to hear them. It was hard to sit and watch these two men. Even if they were making these statements under the duress, as they say they were, it's very hard to sit and watch these two men be forced to make statements like this, where they are professing now their Islamic faith. They said they were forced to do this. Still very difficult to watch. What's your reaction? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. A few common themes in the two statements. One, both of them brought up how repugnant it is for the Muslims in that part of the world to hear the term Islamic fascism. And the other thing that both of them did was appeal, one of them, to both George W. Bush and Tony Blair to open their minds and embrace Islam and bring peace. The other one simply appealed to President George W. Bush to rethink his policy in the Middle East. What I found interesting was, here in the statement made under coercion, here in a conversion statement made under duress, the first man, Steve Santani, read from a paper which said, Islam teaches people to love mercy, equality, and justice. And then he went on to enumerate all the injustices that are being carried out by the U.S. A statement made under duress. What would you do if you were in their shoes? They were held hostage, kidnapped, apparently tied up and beaten at certain points. The news said yesterday they were roughed up on several occasions. And let's assume for a moment we're talking here about men who are Christians. If you were at gunpoint, urged, required, cajoled, compelled to profess Islam, to convert, what would you do? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. First question I asked myself when I heard it yesterday, I was driving to church. And I thought to myself, if I were in their shoes, what would I do? Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. You can email us right here in the studio. We'll get your questions and your comments. For the next 10 or 15 minutes, it's audio open lines for your questions and comments, your reaction to the alleged conversion of two Fox News journalists to Islam. 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. Now, I'd like to say that if I were in their shoes, I would have rather taken a bullet than profess Islam. I would like to say that. But then I started thinking over all those people, not to Islam or the Middle East, but all those people in the long history of the Christian church who under persecution did renounce their Christian faith. You know, there was an entire segment of early Christian history where this was the predominant controversy, a theological controversy in the Christian church. What do you do with people who, under the threat of persecution or martyrdom, renounced Christ? It split the church to a great degree. What do you do with them? They called them the lopsy, the people who fell away. And then I thought about somebody else, somebody from the Bible. Maybe you can guess who I'm thinking of. Let's go to the phones and talk with Dorothy in Manchester. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello. This is the first time I've heard this today, so it's very difficult to listen to. As I listen to these men talk, I got nauseated. And it seems like... I couldn't do that. Now, that wouldn't be my own strength. That would be the Holy Spirit. But when I was picturing myself having to say what these men said, I'd probably throw up. I don't think I could do it because of my love for the Lord, and that's just God's doing in me. I'm not condemning these men at all, but that's horrible. And it seems like to me this is a scary thing, and it's like it's a taste of things to come for us Christians.
You're thinking the same thoughts I was thinking, Dorothy. Thank you very much for your call. Right. If at all I were able to choose the bullet rather than the conversion, it would have nothing to do with me, believe me. You know what I was thinking about? Maybe this is just the frame of mind I was in yesterday when I first heard the story, and I had the same kind of reaction that Dorothy had. You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about my kids. If I were in these two journalists' shoes, having been kidnapped and at gunpoint being urged to convert to Islam and make a statement here. And by the way, do you think this is good PR for Islam? If I were in their shoes, the one thing I was thinking is, how could I publicly renounce what I have spent my life, my children's lives, teaching them is true? What would my children think? That was just my immediate reaction. What would my children think to see their father on television renouncing Christ and professing Islam? How could I ever face my kids, even if I got out safe? It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. this Monday, August the 28th. Would you have denied Christ like these two Fox News journalists allegedly did? Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dave's up next. He calls from Florissant. Hi, Dave.
Yes, I would hope not, but the instance would have to come before we would really find out. But my question is, with that rather comprehensive statement that the first journalist read aloud, or more or less, you know, he sounded like he did better than just read it. You know, he must be a good reader of copy or whatever.
Well, he's the journalist. The other guy was just the guy who holds the camera.
Right.
So let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he's probably a little more articulate than the average Joe. He was reading it. Did you see the video, by the way?
No, I didn't see the video. But the thing that really gets me is that it was so, I guess, worded in such a way that I fear for this guy when he decides to leave Islam. I mean, he would be a big target there, because it would seem like, to some Muslims, that this was a, quote, a genuine acceptance of Islam. So I don't know how he would live the rest of his life. I mean, it would be very tough, knowing what we know about the more radical Islamic people.
He might be in more danger after renouncing his renunciation than he is, or than he had been in captivity. Well, okay, just for those of you who didn't see the video, he was reading from sheets of paper. I got the impression, actually, Dave, that it was very mechanical and very wooden. This was a guy who, if he was making a heartfelt statement, could have put a little more into it. But, of course, they'd been in captivity, and they'd been under a certain amount of duress, and I don't know how articulate I would be under those circumstances. Now, it's one thing to denounce U.S. foreign policy, which is largely what these statements were. They began with the profession of the Islamic faith, and then they went very quickly to renouncing U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. So they were political statements as much as they were religious statements. That's one thing. Honestly, I think that whole issue of, you know, reporters being forced to renounce U.S. foreign policy and make statements to George W. Bush and asking him to embrace Islam and peace in the Middle East pales by comparison to the statements that are made earlier there about Muhammad is Allah is one God, he is the only God, and Muhammad is his prophet, which is the creed of Islam, which no Christian could say. Not honestly. What do the rest of you think about it? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Listening in Florida, here's Matt. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd. Peter came to mind.
Peter came to mind for me, too.
Yeah. I mean, he denied him three times. He denied Christ three times.
And Peter didn't have a gun to his head. He was just being interrogated by a little girl. He was safe and sound.
Yeah.
And
well, he might have also been surrounded by, you know, I mean, he's in the courtyard where Jesus is, so there is a little more going on out there. Initially, of course,
He certainly thought there was.
Yeah. And Peter, of course, was the first one to draw a sword when Jesus looked like he was in a lot of trouble in the garden. So, but this same Peter turned around and denied Jesus three times. And, of course, he got to be reinstated, and most of the church believes that he was a you know, the prominent leader of the early church. What did the early church do with people like that?
Thank you, Matt. It's a good question. Well, there was a controversy after the time of persecution and after the legalization of Christianity, I believe, when there was still a generation of people who had, under persecution, thrown the pinch of incense in for the emperor or renounced Jesus Christ publicly and then lived while Christianity was still illegal as though they weren't Christians. There was a fair number of them who said, look, I'm just going to say what I have to say. You know, to heck with the emperor. I'm going to say what he wants me to say, but I'll still be a secret Christian. And the church had to sort all these things out. Eventually, the consensus of the church was to receive these people back in repentance. That was not the universal consensus of the church, but eventually that was the general consensus of the church is, look, we would never, just like Peter, we would never say, oh, you know, if you're really up between a hard rock and a hard place, just say you don't know Jesus. You know, come on. Sign the paper, throw in the incense. You know, there are too many that went and died refusing to even acknowledge the emperor in any way that would place him alongside Jesus Christ. For the church to say, okay, you know, if you're... be faithful unto death, or maybe unto the threat of death, and then you can don't have to be faithful. No. But the church said, after repentance, they received back just like Peter. We can't do any better than our Lord did with receiving Peter back. Here's Dennis, who calls from his car. Dennis, our time is pretty short.
Hello, Pastor Pat. How are you doing?
Very well.
This is not really a remarkable incident. This has been going on actually since the 7th century, when Muslims have been forcing Christians, you know, by the sword to convert to Islam. However, it's one of those contradictions within Islam because there's a statement in the Quran that says, let there be no compulsion in the religion of God. And this is a direct contradiction from their own holy book. And one other thing that I'd like to add, within the context of Shia Islam, they have a loophole that says if they are under duress, they can renounce their faith. Though not in their heart, they can verbally renounce their faith and still remain Muslim.
Interesting. I had not known that, Dennis. Thank you very much. So it's not a two-way street. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the video was prefaced by a graphic that had some sort of statement from the Quran. It had a surah and a verse indicated where no one converts under compulsion. This is not... These things were sold on Arabic television as completely free conversions. The people simply saw the light. These two journalists simply saw the light and converted to Islam. Well, after they're released, of course, we're told that this was done at gunpoint. So these were compelled from these two journalists. More of your phone calls and your email after this break on the alleged conversion of two Fox News journalists. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. This break is a good time to call. Also, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Then after a little bit more audio open lines, we'll talk with Pastor David Loftus about close or closed communion. After that conversation, that'll round off, that'll get us halfway through the program. At 4:30, a review of a sermon preached very recently by Pastor John Veeker on Jesus cleansing the temple and weeping over Jerusalem. It's coming up later on the program.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.